The content here is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as medical advice. Please consult a healthcare professional with any medical questions and concerns.
If you are experiencing an emergency or need immediate help, call 911. In no way does listening, reading, emailing, or interacting on social media with our content establish a therapeutic relationship.
This episode contains discussions of trauma. Listener discretion is advised, and please take care of yourself while listening.
I just get so angry. It's hard to sit still. I don't want to be this way.
My brain just feels all scrambled.
Welcome to episode 68 of Scrambled. I'm Chad Douglas, along with my co-host Nikki Shields. We're joined again by Dr. Jessica Patel, who was with us with the last episode, as she is an expert on trauma, because you can say again, Dr. Patel, what your expertise is in trauma. But there were words I don't think I've ever heard before, so we'll just label you a trauma expert. But you are in the mental health field, just in case you are listening to this episode without listening to 67, which I guess you don't necessarily have to. Dr. Patel, why don't you tell us what you do and why you're an expert in trauma?
I'm a child clinical psychologist, but I also have a master's of jurisprudence and child law. So a lot of my earlier work, especially in my career, was regarding trauma and foster care, and that's how I spent all of my time in grad school in terms of my thesis and dissertation and all of those fun things as well.
And it was fun on the last episode. We said that you were the first returning guest and now you're returning again. So we're going to put you on the payroll. And
yay! I got to keep coming back now.
Yeah. Well, you give us great information. So we hear a lot of listener feedback on that. I do have a follow-up question though from episode 67. It kind of chatted since it dropped, and it's like trauma is such a uncomfortable thing that people kind of tend to shy away from it. What kind of damage does that do in healing trauma?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point is, you know, a lot of people have not experienced some of the bigger traumas, especially. And so talking about it can actually raise a lot of feelings for them and can be very uncomfortable. So you'll find even physicians or mental health professionals or people like that who are trained and have a background who may avoid some of those trauma-related questions unless you explicitly bring it up. And a lot of that is because, you know, of just it being more of an uncomfortable topic. And that can also be very hard for people because if they're talking about their own trauma, which we want them to do that as part of like processing their trauma. And if the person they're sharing that with isn't as comfortable, depending on their reactions and things like that, that can be very hard for the individual too.
I would imagine so.
Yeah. And I'm sure this has probably come up before, but, and then professionals or other people can experience vicarious trauma as well, just from hearing, you know, especially a lot of details about other individuals' trauma. Mm-hmm. So especially if you're in the mental health profession or someone who encounters that quite a bit, you have to have a really good balance to make sure that that then doesn't start impacting you to the point where then it could impact your treatment or work with your clients.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I do remember as an early clinician that, you know, if I knew a child had a history of a traumatic event, like I would, and we would get to like the part of the assessment when I'm first getting to know them and asking lots of questions where we would get there. I remember feeling very uncomfortable asking those questions and bringing, it was almost like I felt like I would, you know, make them relive the thing right there just by asking those questions. And so I do think like professionals work, you have to get to a place where you know how to ask, where you're comfortable asking. And that can be hard because we think we're protecting, and this goes for parents as well. We think we're protecting these children by not having to bring this thing back up. But if it's a traumatic event and it's still with them, I promise you it's there. And, you know, talking about it and working through it is going to be better for them in the long run than avoiding it.
And that kind of leads into the whole topic of this episode of healing from trauma. So we know you can, well, I'll ask it instead of saying we know, because I don't. Can you 100% heal from trauma, or you just learn how to accept it?
That's a good question. I think the 100% heal, you know, definitely will kind of make me qualify my response. There are absolutely treatments for trauma that are research supported and that we know work well and can make incredible differences for people of all ages, whether you're, you know, a toddler or an elementary school or an adult or elderly. I mean, really anyone. There are though times, and this will throw people off sometimes, that you really feel healed from the trauma. And then sometimes something comes up that maybe is a trigger for you and you still have some of the feelings. Now we would expect after treatment that maybe those feelings wouldn't be as big as maybe they were before, but that can possibly happen. But we hope that through treatment, you've learned, you know, really great coping skills and have a good support system and also know to recognize like, hey, maybe I need to jump back in and get a little bit more support. But yes, you can absolutely make significant process in coping and dealing with trauma.
I like that. Treating it instead of healing from it, like a scrape on your arm, you know, will heal up and your body repairs itself. But something like this, you just have to go through the treatment, which there are a handful of treatments that I'm aware of. What are some different avenues folks can go down to start that treatment process?
There are a lot of different avenues. And I think, you know, it can be very, very just overwhelming for individuals to know what to do. And, you know, a lot of times people's first line of defense is to talk to their physician. And physicians are well trained and very well meaning, but may also not know the resources in their area as well. So that can be, you know, very difficult just to kind of find your path moving forward. I think when we're talking about general treatment or like types of treatment, one of the things to consider is, and I talk about this with anyone, it could be an adult too, but especially for kids, like if the trauma is ongoing, which a lot of people are living through ongoing trauma, it doesn't mean that you can't get treatment and benefit from treatment, but it is going to be harder. And so sometimes we have, you know, we can think of things like car accidents, maybe where it's like, okay, a massive trauma, it is finished, that's not happening. And then we need to treat the response to the trauma, or there can be ongoing traumas in terms of abuse or neglect, or like living in a very unsafe situation that maybe you're not able to change. And again, it doesn't mean that you can't continue to move forward in terms of processing and developing coping skills and developing a good support system to deal with that trauma, but it's going to look very different. And so we want to, I mean, ideally in an ideal world, the first step is really making sure that people have that really like safe and secure foundation. And in whatever that may be, whether it's kind of getting away from the trauma or making their circumstances as safe and secure as they possibly can be, given life's circumstances that we can't always change.
Sure.
But I think the other part too, which is something we talked a little bit about in the last episode, is even recognizing what trauma is or how might this impact us. So that psychoeducational part, no matter what treatment, is like the first step in trauma, is understanding like facts, like what is trauma? You know, what do people experience? Like, how might this look for people? You know, if they're in, like, I think Nikki mentioned this in the last episode, of people might say, well, no, that happened in the past. It's not impacting me now. And we know from, like, for example, the adverse childhood experiences or ACEs study, which I think I mentioned just in passing before, that if you've experienced any sort of adverse childhood experience, and that could be big things like, you know, abuse, neglect, sexual abuse, physical neglect, emotional neglect. It can also be exposure to domestic violence, like substance abuse in your household, all of these other things. And you might not recognize that as something that's still impactful, but we know long-term that it has massive impacts on physical health and mental health and, you know, even work and how you think about the world and all of these aspects. So that psychoeducation piece can be really, really important. And also just that foundation of like, you are a safe person and a supportive person. A lot of people will also enter with a very strong and fair distrust of professionals, because maybe, you know, especially if you think about an adult, maybe they weren't believed before, or maybe a kid told someone their trauma and then they had to be removed from their home for their own safety, but that still disrupts that connection or the relationship. And so kind of understanding too that, you know, maybe if you're a professional and you're working with people and you're getting some pushback or that distrust, like that can come from a very, very, very fair place, and kind of really then having that psychoeducation and really working to build up the relationship as a foundation. That's not enough. You know, that's all very, very important. But then we'll talk about, you know, some of the research-based treatments kind of once you have that foundation that can really help people process the trauma, just so they can be happier and more successful and feel better in their daily life.
In case I forget to say this, thank you very much for doing this and being so candid about everything, like what you just said about not trusting professionals. And you're like, and that's fair if something happens. So I appreciate that you're coming on and just speaking candidly about a very, very serious topic. So we appreciate that.
Well, thank you. It's definitely something that, you know, even when I think about my own professional development as, you know, like a newly turned 22-year-old kind of doing therapy, which was longer ago than I would like to admit. And, you know, even how I coped with trauma that people told me, or those kind of things, and kind of learning all of the different avenues and perspectives and just really listening to all of the individuals who have come through my doors. And I've made a very long-lasting impact on me. There are people that I've seen 20 years ago that I still kind of wonder how they're doing
now. Yeah.
So They make
and that speaks to your character because they've made an impact on you and everything. When it comes to treatment of trauma, is there like a medicinal route or is it a therapy? Is it a combination of both? I already know the answer.
What do you think the answer is, Chad? That's my question.
I think it's going to depend on the individual. And yes, all of three of those things could work.
100%. You're right, Chad. Yes, totally. You know, it depends on kind of the level of symptoms. So for some individuals to even be able to take the step to talk about their trauma, to learn even the psychoeducational parts about the trauma or move in that direction, medication might need to be the first step because it's kind of like it's so triggering and anxiety provoking for them that they need something that's going to help. And, you know, SSRIs are usually the first line of defense. They're very research supported for PTSD. Although depending on, again, it's different for every person, but that's kind of usually the starting point that people will take. Sometimes you need something like that to be able to then help kind of take the edge off of some of that anxiety so that way you can move forward and process the trauma. And it doesn't mean, you know, some people will need to take medication for their, you know, for the foreseeable future just to kind of help them cope with PTSD or anything like that that they may be dealing with. Some people won't, or it might be a shorter term burst of medication, but that can be really helpful and it can be helpful in kids too. And so that is definitely something that you'd want to talk to your physician about or psychiatrist about in terms of kind of first steps.
And so that basically just treats the symptoms.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
So then you're able to talk about it. Okay.
Yes, 100%. And so it's not going to like quote unquote cure the trauma or kind of like completely heal you from trauma in any way, but it could at least kind of help to relieve some of the symptoms so that way you're able to kind of take that step forward in terms of processing the trauma. And again, not everyone will need to go that route, but that definitely is a route that some people may even need to take before they come into therapy. And it's very individualized. Mm-hmm.
A lot of times I will tell parents that, you know, you may be resistant, but medication oftentimes opens the door so the rest of treatment is possible. And so depending on the situation, that is often a good place to start.
Yes.
Sometimes you don't want to start there. I mean, it we've said this a million times, but it depends on the person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and medications, I think, you know, and this is a whole nother thing. Medications, it can be very scary to think about with younger kids. But if you're working with someone who has experience in, you know, working with young kids who've experienced trauma and prescribing medication and is very knowledgeable, and you make sure that, you know, you're dealing with trauma here and you've kind of ruled out other kind of comorbid things that could be going on, it can be really, really helpful. But of course, that's always going to be a very personal decision for the family or for the adult. If you're an adult, you have the right to make that decision for yourself as well too. But it can also be really just, it can be really, really helpful in a lot of cases. And then when we talk about therapy, so there are definitely research-supported interventions for trauma. And I do think that it is very, very, very critical if you are seeking out a therapist and you've experienced trauma and that's what you're going into process, that you're working with someone who has experience in working with trauma. And, you know, as not all mental health professionals have that background. And
I think that's super important to point out, because I think general public, because you guys are the ones with the degrees in mental health, I am the general public here. When you think I'm going to therapy, this person's going to be able to treat and talk about every aspect of it, but not all therapists are trained. So you got to find that one that is specialized and make sure that you guys are a good match.
Absolutely. And, you know, I just think about it like as if you take your kid to the pediatrician for a general illness, and this happened to us today, and it's like, no, you know, now I need you to go see an ENT because I can look at their ears or nose or throat and notice that something's different, but I want you to go to that specialist to really handle it. And that's kind of what you're dealing with here is you have like general mental health professionals, which are fabulous. And then they should also be able to recognize like, hey, you need to go to more of a trauma focused professional, but it is really, really critical that you do that. So that way your treatment is more effective. And now the beauty of so many more people being on telehealth and having virtual options is that if you don't have someone in your area, you can use anyone in your state, anyone who's a licensed in your state. So if you're in a rural town in Missouri who doesn't have a trauma-focused professional, guess what? Maybe there's someone in Kansas City or in St. Louis, and you can use anyone in the state who is licensed to see people. So that the beauty of telehealth expanding is it does give people more options. And I think you just kind of alluded to this point too, is you also have to make sure it's a good fit. And you have the right, again, you know, just kind of getting to know people, you want to give, kind of give people a chance. And, you know, your first meeting, you may not be able to tell if it's the best fit, but you do have the right to advocate for change or, and to really question the process of like, hey, we're supposed to be working on my trauma, but here's what you're doing. I don't understand why we're doing it. Now, sometimes a therapist will say, yes, but we're at step one and here's step 30 that kind of gets to where you want to be. And once you see that process, you're like, okay, beautiful. Like we can keep going because, you know, therapy is definitely a process, but you should know what that process is and feel comfortable questioning the therapist, and the therapist should be really comfortable answering those questions as well. But they should be able to also identify like what are the modalities that I'm using to treat trauma and what kind of training do I have regarding trauma? And there is nothing wrong with asking what someone's experiences or training is, and no professional should be offended by that. And if they are, please find a different professional. Like you are the consumer and you have the right to make the best choice, and no one should be offended if they talk to you and they decide to go to someone else. Okay, that person was a better fit. Good, they found someone, and that is the most important thing.
And the therapist also has that right. Yes. If they don't think that they're a good fit for that client.
Yes, 100%. And so if you're a mental health professional, it's getting beyond your scope. Like that is something that is the most critical thing that we need to know to do for our patients, is to say, this is not in my scope, but guess what? I will help you find a professional who can work with you to really address this, because you want it to be as effective as possible.
Right, right. That's what it's all about. Can we talk a little bit specifically about EMDR? Are you trained in that, or you know enough about it to speak about it?
I can speak somewhat about it. So I'm not trained in EMDR, but I do know a lot of the research behind it. And, you know, the research, and I think you may have even talked about this on a previous episode, but I know the research initially came out of directly like strong PTSD in vets through the VA, and found it to be a really, really nice grounding technique as people are processing their trauma. And it can be highly effective in processing trauma.
And how does it work? We mentioned on the, I think it was the Trauma 101 episode, Nikki, but the acronym EMDR was, it's like rapid, well, it's not rapid because it starts with an E, but it's like rapid eye movement is what it does. And the way it was explained to me was that when you dream at night and you're in REM sleep, which is rapid eye movement, that's kind of your brain going, okay, this file folder goes in this file cabinet and this one goes over here, and just processing everything that went through the day. When you get something that's traumatic, it kind of, it's like those file folders were just tripped, somebody tripped and spilled it all over the floor. So your brain doesn't know what to do with them. So by doing this EMDR rapid eye movement, it kind of helps go, okay, let's pick up this file folder and put it over here. Am I making sense?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So basically it's kind of taking all of these kind of memories or thoughts that are kind of going through and helping to reorganize them. And then if you kind of think about a computer model, it's kind of like you have all these different files and you're putting them into the right organizational system, and it's helping you do that. And then it's helping you kind of go through afterwards and process everything in more of an organized fashion.
It's just, and I can't get into a whole lot of details, but I've seen it work in front of me and it is truly fantastic. And we've commented on this before about Prince Harry is the one who alluded it or brought it to my attention in the Apple TV Plus series, The Me You Can't See, which is phenomenal. You should check that out. But he used it after his mom was killed in the car crash. And so that's what kind of got it up. And again, not getting into too many details, but I've seen it work and it blew my mind. So I think that's fascinating. So I guess I'm just saying, if you have a traumatic experience, see if that might help, or at least ask your therapist if they know anything about it.
It's worth looking into. And and just like any other, you know, symptom or diagnosis that you might have, there are lots of different ways to treat those. And so you have to find the thing that's comfortable for you. And I met with people who have tried EMDR and didn't love it. But I met with people who tried lots of other approaches to dealing with their trauma and didn't find success until they found EMDR. And they were like, where has this been all my life? And so I just think it's really important to research what's out there, choose one that fits right or feels right for you. And then if it's not working, if it's not what you're looking for, know that there's a million other ways to get there. But what Dr. Patel said earlier about like the baseline of like psychoeducation about trauma, that is going to be at the beginning of every trauma treatment experience. Every approach that you use is going to start with those kinds of things.
Well, and I think in terms of selecting, kind of going back to selecting a mental health professional, you have to be certified in EMDR in mm-hmm. order to properly administer EMDR. So this would be a question that you'd want to ask a mental health professional if you mm-hmm. are really interested in EMDR, is are you certified in EMDR? Not like I have some training in it or I've heard about it, but you want someone with a certification mm-hmm. in EMDR, because it is not something that they would have been exposed to just in their general training. And it's not something mm-hmm. that most people would have ever even witnessed as part of a mm-hmm. rotation unless they had that specific like trauma focused training. So mm-hmm. it's really yep. critical that you find someone who's certified.
And it sounds out there, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds, when they explain to you what it is, it's like, why? So again, we'll move on from EMDR, but I just wanted to ask that as a potential treatment. So what other kind of therapeutic treatments are available for those who've experienced trauma?
I think a few of the other big ones that we'll talk about too are cognitive behavioral therapy and trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. And the idea behind these is that, again, we have these automatic thoughts that come into our heads and that impacts our behavior. And basically, if we can kind of challenge that thought process, then we can also change our behavior and our feelings behind it. And there's actually a specific trauma-focused CBT, which again is another certification. So another question you'd want to ask too, that can be very, very highly effective in treating trauma.
When you go in to start talking about this, what's the first step after you've realized that there's needs to be some trauma therapy? What's the first step of like, do you have a question answer session with your therapist and see where you go from there?
Yeah. I think like if you're talking about, you know, if you've decided like, hey, I've experienced this trauma, it is time to seek something out. Or if you have a child and you're trying to seek something out for them, is one, finding mental health providers who have experience with trauma. And that can be hard depending on where you live. Mm-hmm. But there are also websites. So there's a TFCBT website that lists out people by location and who are certified. I have not looked at the EMDR one, but I'm sure it exists as well too. So you could actually, there's directories. You can look for people who are certified in those specific trauma-focused treatments. And that can be a really good starting point. And as I mentioned too, opening it up to anyone who's licensed in your state. So it doesn't necessarily, for EMDR, it needs to be more local, but for something like TFCBT and you're an adult, you could do that virtually. And so then, yes, usually whenever you're getting started with a therapist, there's going to be like an intake and a general kind of question and answer session and getting to know people. And that can take a little bit. And so I think sometimes that throws people off too, because they're like, I've just talked to my therapist for the first few sessions and we're just kind of getting to know each other. It's like, yeah, that's what you need to do. It's building a relationship and that sort of trust and making sure you're a good fit for each other and really trying to understand what's going on so you can kind of be off and running. Now, you know, if you're on session 10, it still shouldn't be just chit-chatting and getting to know each other. You want to be like moving towards more active treatment, but also sitting down and establishing a treatment plan of like, what strategies are we using? Like, what are the goals? And kind of just making sure everyone is on the same page kind of as you're getting started.
Do children take to this a little better than adults, or does the healing happen a little more quickly because they're children? You know, the whole children are resilient kind of thing. Is there a difference?
Ooh, that's a good question. Children are resilient is one of my least favorite quotes because I don't think it's true. And it doesn't mean that they aren't. I think all humans are resilient, but we think we expect kids to be more resilient than they actually are in a lot of these situations, which then our own expectations, and we can be very well-meaning parents. Our own expectations can then influence how that trauma or their experience is manifesting because they feel like they should be processing different, or they feel like they should be better or more resilient than they are, but that can kind of fall into the minimizing trauma. I think it's all really individual. I mean, individualized. So the hard thing with kids, especially young kids, is usually, I have seen it happen before where they seek out their own therapy, but usually they're not the one seeking it out.
Right.
They're not the one going to an adult and saying like, hey, I need help with this. Like their behavior might be saying that in different ways, but like a caregiver or, you know, school or someone else is kind of saying, hey, we've decided that this is what you need. Where when you're an adult, yes, your family or spouse or partner, whoever else might be saying, hey, this is what you need. But ultimately, as an adult, you're the one who consents to everything and you are the one making the decision. So, you know, I've definitely seen resistance in both groups, especially if you're an adult. If you think about it, maybe it was a childhood trauma and you've had some bad therapeutic experiences or people who didn't believe you along the way, or, you know, distrust of professionals or all of these other things that have happened. So that can create kind of more resistance too. But some people are very open to it. And some kids are very, very open to it and really love the fact that they have this person in their life who they can trust and who cares about them and is just kind of their other support person. And a lot of kids are very resistant, especially if they've had complex trauma where a lot of adults have really, you know, failed them, you know, and not always the fault of the adult. But if you think about, I'm going to use an example of like kids in foster care, like the ultimate thing is that your parents are there to love and protect you. And somewhere along the line, something went wrong.
Yeah.
And that basic foundation of trust has been broken. And you then as a therapist, you have to kind of, the first part of that is working past that so you can build the relationship. So that way you can start to like process a trauma and everything else that they're going through.
What kind of reactions do you get from parents once the treatments begin and they start to see changes for the better in their child?
I mean, I think it really depends. I think that, you know, it's interesting is sometimes there's, I mean, ideally, whenever there's any sort of positive change, we want a lot of positivity behind that and recognition of the individual's hard work that they're doing in therapy and how wonderful it's going. Sometimes, you know, we live in an age where people can be more impatient and they expect results really, really quickly. And this can be a longer process, especially if it's, you know, has been a history of like ongoing complex trauma. It's going to take a long time to get through that. And sometimes what happens is we will see evidence of positive change, but we'll see those glimmers, which is great. Like as like a mental health professional, that's what you love. You're like, oh, I see a glimmer of like this super, it could even be something as like simple as we would call it. Like this kid's really silly personality is coming up and I'm seeing glimmers of who they actually are. But then sometimes when you see those glimmers, they're short-lived. And sometimes people will take those glimmers as evidence that they should then be able to apply it in all situations. And that somehow then they're failing because it's not happening everywhere yet. And I do see that quite a bit too. And a lot of that too, you know, sometimes this is just from very well-intentioned people. And as a psychologist, but as a parent, I have to remind myself too, is a lot of people don't have background in mental health and how this works and how the brain works and how kids work and all of this stuff. And a lot of people are just really, really new to this situation. And that's also where the psychoeducation, especially if there's parents involved, or partners, spouses, whoever else is involved, like including them in on the psychoeducation so they can really, really understand the process as well.
And I was going to ask you that is, do you feel that generally speaking, parents need to get some information on the front end and have a really good understanding on the front end for trauma therapy to work for children? Do you feel like the parents need to kind of maybe have their own, not their own therapy necessarily. I mean, of course there's that, but with the child's therapist, how involved should they be? You know, what do they need to do to make sure the child can get through that successfully?
That's a great question. And so again, we're kind of working under the assumption that there are parents involved and like there's a lot of kids who don't have parents, caregivers, or, you know, they've been bounced around to different foster homes, which then leads to a lot of issues, even from consent issues where you might not have consent as a therapist to talk to the foster parent. There's all sorts of these like little kind of caveats within that as well. But yes, having the parents involved, having them really understand, you know, the psychoeducational part, making sure everyone's on the same page in terms of the goal, everyone's working together, and also knowing how they should be continuously supporting their child at home. So, you know, you could be a wonderful therapist, but you might have an hour a week with a child if you're lucky. And then, of course, you know, hey, people get sick or whatever else happens. And there might even be bigger gaps. And parents are with them or caregivers can be with them all of the time. So how do they handle these moments? What do they do? And also, again, parents can be very well intentioned, but what could they be doing in some of these situations that might actually be exacerbating the trauma? And they had no idea they were even doing that. Would never be the intention. So parents really, really, really do need to be involved. It also needs to be clearly set up. And some of this can be depending on consent laws in your state as to like what is going to be released to the parent too. Because there might be, you know, you have a teenager who has the right to protect their own mental health record, and they need to be able to comfortable, they need to be feel comfortable telling their therapist maybe details about the trauma that they haven't told their parents. And eventually, you know, maybe you'll get to disclosure if that's appropriate. But in order for them to process a trauma, there needs to be some sort of boundaries. And oftentimes there's legal boundaries that the therapist cannot cross too, even with minors, unless they feel that kid is at imminent risk. And then there's, of course, disclosures or other things that can be made. But parents need to know that from day one, so everyone is on the same page.
Good point.
What modalities of treatment work best for trauma? So like family therapy, individual therapy, group therapy, what kind of thing do we see with trauma therapy?
Yeah, I think that, you know, an aspect of when something's impacting a family member, no matter what the age, it impacts the whole family. So I do think an aspect of incorporating the family, and then oftentimes it's going to be paired with individual therapy, is really, really important. Group therapy can also be really helpful to individuals too. And I've also ran trauma-focused groups in the past. I think that some of the challenges are that, and this has happened in one of my group experiences that stood out to me, is that people kind of would judge how bad, quote unquote, their trauma was compared to other people. So they felt bad, like talking about their trauma, if they didn't perceive it as harsh, like they didn't perceive it to be as bad as some of the other people who had experienced trauma, like, ooh, their trauma sounds worse, so I shouldn't feel so bad. But it can also be really, really affirming to people, like, okay, other people have experienced this, they kind of know where I'm coming from. So there's always kind of making judgments about groups and kind of what they're addressing, who's in the group. You know, sometimes there's groups for very specific types of trauma, also protecting against that vicarious trauma, depending on where you're at in the treatment. But it can also be really, really helpful from a support perspective, or support groups for the family members. So maybe the family members who did not experience the trauma, but of course are still devastated by the trauma that their loved one has experienced, that can be nice just to kind of feel like they have some sort of community, because trauma can feel very isolating. Because again, while I feel like we've started to talk so much more in mainstream about mental health, and a lot of the stigma is decreasing with mental health, there's still a lot of kind of stigma surrounding, or again, those uncomfortable feelings surrounding talking about trauma, and it can feel very, very isolating for people.
What is the difference between group therapy and a support group?
Ooh, that's a really good question. So generally, group therapies would be run by a mental health professional, and there's some sort of goal for this group. So it could be like a mindfulness group that we're doing, or it could be like a process group where we're processing trauma. Or I even ran a group once where it was literally like psychoeducation, but it was about life, because these women had experienced complex trauma at a very young age. So they didn't know like how to shop for groceries and what was healthy, and like these very basic psychoeducational things, or like how they could use, in what ways they could most effectively use their money to, like, you know, make meals for the kids. And they like absolutely loved it. So there's all sorts of different things that can happen. A support group oftentimes may not even be facilitated by any sort of mental health professional. They might be, but oftentimes they're facilitated by someone who has either experienced a trauma, or a family member has experienced a trauma. And it's generally just kind of like sharing their experiences to gain a sense of community and support. So that's a really good distinction between like support groups versus like therapeutic groups.
Okay. I'm learning through this episode, I watch too much Apple TV Plus, because there's a series on there called Dear Edward, which is like the only TV show I can think of that hit like all of the emotions. Like, you cried, you laughed, you were fearful, everything. And they did a support group. It's about a 12-year-old who is the lone survivor of a plane crash. So then I guess they had a support group for all the family members of the thing, but it wasn't therapeutic. But I do think, at least this was Hollywood, it was run by a mental health professional, but... Such is life. Oh, good show. Check it out. But like I said, take some Kleenexes with you.
Yeah.
Another difference real quick between those two is that most of the time a support group participation is going to be completely free. There's no billing. Mm-hmm. You don't need your insurance or anything like that. But a therapy group, oftentimes there's going to be some billing, and there may be charges associated with that. Sure.
Well, these last couple of episodes have really been a lot of great information. Dr. Patel, we again thank you for being with us and sharing your knowledge in such a candid, down-to-earth way. I don't think I can thank you enough for sharing it that way.
Well, thank you for having me. I love to come on the podcast and talk.
Good. We've got you on speed dial.
I got a whole list of things for you for the future. So
yes, I love it. I love it.
Come back anytime. As always, we appreciate you sharing these episodes with those you think that could benefit. And I do think some of these episodes could fit just any parent, is some good information. So our whole goal in starting this was to start a conversation, and that conversation continues with you.